We all float down root beer. In honor of it, what's something from your childhood that you read or watched that has had an outsized impact on your life?
I'm Katie Rich, and I'm going with Home Alone, and I know I'm not alone in this movie having a large impact on my life, but it definitely gave me a sense that my house was going to be broken into and I would have to fend off robbers. Like, I just assumed that was going to happen to me, which does not seem like the message of the movie.
Have you seen Last House on the Left?
No, yeah. Maybe that's why I can't stand horror movies, because Home Alone got to me too early.
Just the whole genre, it's out. I'm Dave with the Seven. I was not too young to see Jaws, but I was too imaginative to see Jaws, because I hated going in the deep end of pools for years. Pools, forget beaches. Beaches are for lounging.
Did you just assume that Jaws was there waiting for you?
There were sharks in the water. So what really got me was the one shot where the kid's on the water thing in the bay and seeing the guy get eaten, and you just see the eye roll over, like, beneath Ooh. The water. It's not even like the shark comes up out of it, but that was going to happen to me in every deep end, or that was going to be like the last thing I saw going off the diving board before I hit the water. It was just like that eye rolling up at me.
Yeah, it's a pretty visceral thing to stick with you.
Now it's all on Netflix, so I could watch it and not go to the pool.
Conquer your fears.
Gentlemen, you can't fight in here. This is the war room.
Fine, I can hear you now, Dimitri. Clear and plain and coming through fine. I'm coming through fine too, eh? Good, then. Well, then, as you say, we're both coming through fine. Good. Well, it's good that you're fine, and I'm fine. I agree with you. It's great to be fine.
It's a podcast.
Hello and welcome to Fighting in the War Room. It's episode 180, and it's Tuesday, September 5th, and on this day in 1957, On the Road by Jack Kerouac was published. I feel like we could have done a whole segment three about On the Road somehow.
I live down the street from where they play softball when they're in Denver.
Oh, hey. Should I reread On the Road? Speaking of rereading things from your childhood, I feel like that would not hold up.
I mean, spoiler alert, I don't remember it holding up when I read it like 5 years ago in terms of like what it meant the first time I read it. But, you know, my life perspective's changed a lot since then.
Yeah, it's proof that everyone kind of needs to be taught how to be a feminist. I read it when I was in high school and I was just like, yeah, this is fine. Female characters are not a problem, which I am well aware likely not the case. Anyway, you might be able to tell it's just me and Dave right now. Patches is, I keep wanting to say he's on his honeymoon. He's not. He's just in Hawaii, like some fancy person, just going to secret beaches.
Because he can.
Yeah, because they had the ability to and they did it, and good for them. And David will hopefully come by at some point later to talk about his experience at the Telluride Film Festival, which just ended. But for now, it's me and Dave. And because it's just us, I guess we get to talk about Stephen King.
Yeah, sounds great.
So you've been rereading it. Oh, I'm skipping reviews, but whatever.
Yeah, I'm sure we have reviews, and David will read them all. It's going to be a loose show for a holiday week.
All right. So, Dave, you've been rereading it, and I have not. I haven't read it since I was a kid, and I basically don't plan to see the movie because it looks terrifying. But before we were starting the show, we were just kind of talking about our like various memories of it compared to what the book is actually like. And I just want to start by hearing about your experiences of reading this book again as an adult and how it has held up for you.
Sure. I think I started reading it. My brother was actually the one in the Gonzalez family who was actually into like Stephen King.
Your mom and your brother were both into him, right?
Yeah. Yeah. They were both very much into those long sort of horror pulpy novels. My mom still is, except more in like the mystery vein. And my brother, I think, has evolved a little bit out of that, but like I would draw a really close parallel, and now even more so going back and rereading it, to the way I was like absorbing Goosebumps. My brother was absorbing Stephen King, and my like chapters were, you know, these little book installments, and his was spending a few months like devouring 1400 pages or however the shit long it is. So I'm pretty sure I started reading it, the book It, to prove to like my brother that like there was like I could read the long book and he wasn't like better than me. And so I definitely only got halfway through It before somebody brought up that the ABC miniseries had been released on the 2 VHS set. That's how long it was. It took 2 VHSs to tell that story.
Oh, yeah.
And so I gave up in the middle of the book and never actually got to some of the, I guess, more parts that were changed for the TV show and some of the more controversial parts, like the child group sex. Instead, I got to go directly to the TV adaptation. So it's interesting.
Which I've
going
also
back,
never seen. I hear it's kind of a mixed bag.
It's definitely a mixed bag. I mean, same with The Stand. It's a mixed bag. It's a pretty. It's probably more faithful than it needs to be, but it's also was on television in the 90s, so its scares are limited by that, which is why, you know, an R-rated it coming out this week is super exciting, even if it is just the first part of the story, the Losers Club part of the story. But, like, going back and rereading it is interesting, especially because that's one of the themes of it, is sort of going back and remembering your childhood and having forgot some horrible things that scarred you or whatnot. So it's interesting to go back and reread it and notice all these horror tropes that I know I was getting. You know, scary clown. The clown shows up as, like, Universal Movie Monsters. The clown shows up as, like, Rodan. These are all things that I would have been already familiar with at the age that I would have been reading it. But then there are all these, like, backstory histories of Derry, because Stephen King's an overwriter, that are,
he like, is indeed.
Yeah, they're horrible. They're about racism. They're about child abuse. They're about basically how all female characters in the book are, with the exception of Bev, who's, like, deeply damaged, are horrible mothers. There's a whole bunch of stuff that didn't sink into me as a child because I think I just thought of them like Goosebumps books. Like, they're there. Both Stephen King and R.L. Stine have this thing they do where they reference little bits of pop culture that's very specific to the time period as a way of, like, anchoring you there. And so I think I was also doing one-to-one substitution with, like, this person had an abusive childhood with, like, all abusive childhoods are the same. I'm teenager Dave. I like to overgeneralize things in my stories. So I think for me, I might have just glossed over some of the things that I now recognize were themes as, you know, character development to a spider battle, which is what I was, you know, building up
what
to.
You were in it for. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's funny thinking about the themes of this book kind of being about, like, what you go through as children and then what you forget for yourself as an adult. Because I think back about reading it when I was this age and my parents letting me read it, and I read The Stand and some various other Stephen King books. Those are the two big ones for me. And I think about all the horrifying stuff that's in there that, like you're saying, you kind of gloss over, like, you know, child abuse and just, you know, awful things. But I think the point of the book is that kids can handle more than we give them credit for. And you kind of, like, see, you like, and, you know, obviously reading a book is different from experiencing something like the characters, but there's all this stuff that's presented to you that you have, like, no frame of reference for really understanding when you read a book like this at that age. You just, like, do. And it's just, you read about it and then years later you're like, oh, I didn't understand it, but for some reason it works. I don't even really understand what your brain does when you do that as a kid.
Yeah. Or it's just like, what lines it connects to think that you understand something like, I don't know, the pervasive evil, like allowing a town to do things like burn down the black servicemen's club and, like, you know, screen racial epithets. I mean, a lot of the ways is like the way
you don't remember
that
any of the racial stuff at all.
Yeah. The way I like viewed like racism at the time that I was reading it must have been like, that was something that was, you know, it must have been in the 80s when this book was written, but, you know, now it's 1992 and we're different.
Yeah, yeah, because these books were just a little old for us.
Yeah, so it's like by the time I had gotten to it, it had already, like I said, I got to it because my brother had read it, and I'm almost positive my brother read it because my mom read it, and my mom probably read it because she was, you know, of the age, the adult novel age, when it was of the zeitgeist.
Yeah,
and I just remember it being a lot of places. Like, it would be in used bookstores. I remember seeing it in the library, and it was a hard book to miss because it was so big.
Yeah,
and so I kind of feel like that plus the clown imagery really sort of drew my teenage self to it, which I imagine it did for a lot of people. So it'd be interesting to see if people, when they go back and reread it, start to see some of those things. I'm not going to say that it got better or worse, because I think my appreciation of it differs, and I think the first time I might have been reading it as prose that was equal to or greater than other things I was reading, where now I would call it like kind of pulpy and superfluous. But all those things, now that I've read more Stephen King books, they kind of feel like nostalgia for that era of Stephen King writing. So I kind of like, it's not like spotlighting it makes me dislike the writing anymore. It's just like, oh, there he goes again. Those greaser bullies that, you know, have very little motivation but are absolutely horrible. Here they come.
You talk about the cachet of Stephen King books. You made me just very nostalgic all of a sudden, just for thinking about like the way that all his books kind of had the same graphic design. You'd see them on the shelf at B. Dalton, and like they always felt like of a piece and like the next thing that you were going to tackle. And they're like the sense of pride you were talking about, like proving to your brother that you could read the big book. Like there was definitely a lot of that, because like YA fiction, obviously it's been around for a long time, but it just like wasn't the industry that there weren't that many books like trying to target us in that way. So like when you were a kid who had like something of an advanced reading level, it was like, all right, well, you move on to Stephen King and God help you, see what you can learn from it.
Yeah, well, I was also digesting all the YA fiction they were trying to like target at us at that point, and still like having some time for Stephen King. And so that's what was kind of thrilling when I eventually picked up The Dark Tower, which wasn't until after college, and sort of see that like he sort of like YA'd his own fiction in retrospect. He's like, no, it's all connected. Yeah. It's all in the same universe.
He made there his Marvel universe before the Marvel universe.
Exactly. So like, I can't imagine, I don't even remember what first time IT reader Dave thought the turtle was in terms of the book. But now that I know it's like a Dark Tower totem character that protects the beam, I'm like, oh yes, the turtle. The turtle would be whispering to you, Mark Hanlon.
I felt like I was going to say something else about it, but now I can't. Oh, I guess. So I did reread The Stand recently, and it did hold up in really interesting ways. And it's like you're talking about the prose. So I don't know. I feel like an adult Stephen King reading. Maybe I should just read Dark Tower finally, because I never did do that. But I've read enough of his books that I feel like the idea of a centralized universe. And I know we talked about Dark Tower a couple weeks ago for the movie that, as far as I know, no one knows exists anymore. Came right. And went.
No, we talked about, like, because we're going to do an upcoming Storm of Spoilers on IT and Stephen King and some of the movies and adaptations that have come out of his work. And we were all like, does somebody want to watch The Dark Tower? And out of the three of us, who are so intrepid, we are all watching Tremors movies, of which there are five. None of us wanted to watch The Dark Tower.
Well, it's also not like available to stream for free yet. So, although I guess yeah. Give it a minute.
I mean, I'm sure we'll have time to critically reckon with it. And, you know, we only have, given the current state of Hollywood, like 3 to 9 years before they just try it again and pretend the first one didn't happen. So
yeah, that's true.
We got a little bit of time.
Well, IT is out in theaters this weekend. It looks like it's going to be a gigantic hit. I kind of thought the idea of them making like making it in two parts was a lot of hubris, and we were never going to see it. But it seems pretty certain that we are. So I guess I got to man up and see it eventually.
Yeah, see IT eventually.
See
this movie's so hard to Google and talk about.
Yeah, well, I was gonna say I could see it the same way that I watched The Babadook, which is looking at the plot on Wikipedia before watching it. But I know the plot of IT, so I guess I just need to like see it in a brightly lit room.
Yeah, maybe it's gonna change. It's in the 80s now. They have like that slideshow thing, which I don't remember being in IT, but maybe I'm just like not that part of the book yet.
Yeah, I don't remember that either. But
it would feel weird for them to do the Wolfman, because like, who's gonna be scared by that? So it's like, there's a lot of places that this IT could update itself and still be cool.
I didn't put together that the movie has the kids set in the 80s, although I guess the timeline makes sense for that. That they were kids in the 80s and now they're adults now. Wow, God, that's insane.
It's also 27 years after the first television series. The cycle continues.
Well, it's like when they point out that in 1955 was as far in the past for Back to the Future as 1985 is now, and it's very true, because that's math, and then also sad.
Sad math.
Anyway, let's keep moving on. I don't know where David is. It's the dream. Oh!
So, there's going to be a new DuckTales series on Disney XD.
Isn't it already on?
Well, it's already debuted its two-part pilot for free on YouTube. And when it debuted on Disney XD, they aired it for 24 hours. But the rest of the series doesn't actually debut until September 23rd. Because they want this to sort of like soak into your mind.
You'll never remember a time when there wasn't a DuckTales on.
I mean, at some point. Also, they want to hold to the 23rd because I believe that's the 30th anniversary of the first series. So they want to hold on a little bit to some tradition, which it looks like DuckTales is going to do. Here's the surprise for me. We're talking a lot about my childhood, so let's fucking commit. My friends, my friend's father used to have a whole bunch of old comic books, and I, of course, liked comic books. But he didn't have old superhero comic books or things that we just thought were valuable. What he had was old Uncle Scrooge and Donald Duck comic books from the 50s.
Whoa. Which
were, like, falling apart, but, like, also great because they were printed in that old style and they were just, like, classically illustrated. This is what the DuckTales 27 reboot wants to look like. So immediately, as soon as they showed the new designs of the characters and how the backgrounds and how it's going to move, I'm like, this is going to be at least be interesting to watch, even if they screw it up and over-Disney-fy DuckTales. Because, you know, it's a weird thing to try to reboot.
Explain more to me about this, like, old-fashioned look that they're going for.
So the comic books in the 50s, it's like a lot of bright colors, but also a lot of, what do they call the dot halftone shading.
Uh-huh.
So in order to make like a darker yellow, you don't actually necessarily choose a darker yellow. You do yellow with these like little darker yellow triangles over it to create like a shade. And then the ways that they use black either as shadows or as connecting lines, you'll see will even change in the background of individual shots. Meanwhile, the instead of updating the characters to have a more 3D look, they recommitted to their 2D designs and sort of just updated that. So like the if you were to make a 3D model of Huey, Dewey, and Louie, their beak shapes wouldn't make any sense, but they look like they do, like they're supposed to from every specific angle, which I always thought was cool. Like I remember getting the Darkwing Duck action figures and just being fascinated by how they thought the beak looked in 3D space in like that plastic. But yeah, so right out of the way, I thought it looked really good. In December last year, they announced the voice cast. It was David Tennant's going to be Scrooge McDuck. Danny Pudi was going to be Huey. Ben Schwartz is Dewey. Bobby Moynihan's Louie. Kate Mikuchi is Webby. And so all those people I enjoy. And I'm like, maybe this is going to be worth it. So finally watched the two-part episode. It's 44 minutes. And it's smarter than most Disney XD television, which I don't want to down talk Disney XD television because they have Star Wars Rebels, which I love, and Gravity Falls, which is really good. But that being said, there is some Disney XD television that's super Disney-fied in like that sort of saccharine sweet sort of way that I definitely aged out of, even as like an animation or child television fan. And DuckTales doesn't seem to quite be there. It's right on that line of humor that both parents and kids can enjoy, but it's not because of nostalgia for the original series, which I feel was something tough. There's a lot of Easter eggs for people who are like actually know all the interconnected duck shows.
Oh my god.
What characters might be showing up.
I mean, I guess there are plenty of people like that, but like, you know, I remember the Vault of Gold and like occasional plots and theme song, and that's it. And I imagine a lot of people are in the same boat.
Sure, and that me is all you need to know to go into the pilot. So the pilot is Donald and the three kids are living on a houseboat, and Donald has a job interview, and he needs a babysitter, and the kids have sent the original babysitter off to some desert location we don't know where, so they have to go to Scrooge McDuck's house. They don't know they're related to the richest duck in Duckburg, so the whole thing is sort of a surprise to them. The cool thing is Huey, Dewey, and Louie are kind of modern. They have modern jokes. They get, like, stuck in a room where they're supposed to play with a bag of marbles, and they're like, how are we going to get out of here? And Louis's like, I have an idea. And they cut back later, and his idea was just to hit the doorknob with the bag of marbles. And they're like, we thought your idea would be better than that. And so that sort of humor is at play, whereas Donald Duck is still the classic Donald Duck. So the funny thing about Donald Duck is he's going to be hard to understand for all of his history, because that's kind of part of the character now. But they also keep him the slapstick character. So when we're seeing things that he's doing, he's the one that's accidentally, you know, stapling his tie to a desk or getting caught up at a folding table. Very, like, classic Donald Duck things. While the boys and Scrooge McDuck seem to have aged up into this era of cartoon action with sort of, like, self-referential comedy, or at least semi-sarcastic comedy.
Do you think it's like a brand maintenance thing? Like, you know, there are like core Disney characters that, like, you know, you have to make Goofy and Donald Duck and Mickey all the same?
Maybe. Mickey's, I think, is the only one that has to be, he has to be like the Mario. Like, he can't really do any one thing well, or then he has to stop doing other things as good. But, like, I think with Goofy, they had a lot of success for a little while pivoting him into the father mode with Goofy Movie, which was something that might have been modeled after Donald Duck. It's interesting because DuckTales has always been about, like, Scrooge McDuck more than Donald Duck, because the Uncle Scrooge comic book spinoff ended up being one of the most popular spinoffs of, like, the Donald Duck series. So much as I think it's, like, still going, I don't know if they have ever stopped publishing for more than, like, 5 years. Wow. But it's interesting to see Donald thrown back into this formula that's otherwise been updated, and he's so pure a version of that, like, original Disney character. There's a chance he might grow over the series, but at least for the pilot, I was happy to see him amongst this, like, new plot and newly rounded characters. Donald still ends up in his sailor outfit and still ends up doing slapstick comedy. That was just the first part of the pilot. So obviously the second part, they're introducing more things that they're going to fight. Like in this one, there's a gold eating dragon. So there's a little bit of like supernatural, obviously. And then they also introduce another rich Scottish duck who will be a nemesis for Scrooge. And there's a lot of jokes about who is the richest Scottish duck. And it's always very specific about being Scottish and which one is more Scottish. It's pretty funny. I know you're getting into children's television.
Hey, I know. Well, and we have you know, the only true ethnic heritage I have is Scottish, so maybe we should really get on the McDuck train.
Yeah, make it part of your. You should. There's a point in the pilot where one of the characters unveils, I think what we call it in pop culture is a murder wall, but one of those walls with yarn connecting
a yarn wall.
And I'm sure if you want to get really into the idea of the McDuck family line, you could freeze that wall and learn some crazy DuckTales facts. You could become the foremost expert on DuckTales, Katie.
That feels like some kind of weird white supremacist thing to be like, we like DuckTales because they're good Scottish ducks.
Well,
I'm like Darkwing Duck, that Ingrate. I don't know who the
Darkwing Duck's going to show up in this new series they announced at Comic-Con. So I imagine through good old Launchpad McQuack, who's back. But yeah, you know, there's, I think, a lot of ways for this to branch out if it wants to. But what I'm happy is that it looks like they actually revamped the series to have a good enough foundation to sort of like come back. I mean, the best example of something like this, I think, would be like My Little Pony, which had a life as like this prissy, princessy nonsense, and now has a life as a completely different story about friendship is magic. They might be able to do it with DuckTales. Who knows?
It's just a relief to see like a nostalgia play like this. And like, obviously, Disney brought this back because there was a lot of nostalgia for it among the people who have children who are of age to watch it, like me. But just when people bother to do it well, and I feel like we get so sick of the nostalgia play from, you know, Fuller House and the like, that it just helps be reminded. It's like, no, this thing has staying power because it can be good. And if you just do it well, it doesn't have to be a chore.
Yeah. And I'm glad somebody saw through all the winking and was like, look, the rich Scottish duck goes on adventures with his nephews. It's like, how can we fuck this up? And the good thing is they didn't. Sometimes they find a way to do it, But here, at least for 40-some minutes, it feels like DuckTales. Looks like DuckTales, tastes like DuckTales.
Yeah.
Must be DuckTales.
Do you think we'll ever get Animaniacs back?
Do we want Animaniacs back?
I don't know. I mean, that's the next question. But it just feels like that could be inevitable. And, you know, I have incredibly fond memories of how clever that show was. It feels like it could hold up.
Yeah. Let me see if I could Google this. Animaniacs reboot plans, May 30th. Animation. Yep. So, yes. The answer to your question is apparently yes.
Ah. Great. I probably don't want it. I apologize for saying so.
According to IndieWire, too bad David isn't here. Amblin Television and Warner Brothers Animation in early talks to bring back Animaniacs.
Yep.
So there you go. You spoke it into existence right then.
I know.
Berenstain bared it for everybody.
In terms of like TV theme songs that you like, do you think that you remember the DuckTales theme or the Animaniacs theme better?
I'm pretty good with both, but I think I'm probably better with the entirety of Animaniacs because there's a whole part after and rewrite history DuckTales in the DuckTales theme song.
That's the problem with the DuckTales theme song is it's more like a pop song, so it's got kind of that bridge that you don't necessarily remember. And then it repeats itself a lot at the end.
Yeah,
Animaniacs just keeps going. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Come try the Warner Brothers and the Warner System. Just for fun, we run around the Warner.
We run around the Warner lot. We lock us in the tower whenever we get caught.
And we can at least remember moves, and now we know the plot.
Yeah, but then there's also the like, there was the part where like the da-na-na-na-na, while Bill Clinton plays the sax, and it changed every episode, but I remember Bill Clinton playing this. Oh no, is that the part that changed? Or something else changed? Like, we're Animani, totally zany,
Animaniacs. This has been Dave and Katie Remember Animaniacs.
People love episodes where it's just two of us just getting to do whatever we want. One last plug, if you have watched the new DuckTales and you haven't read the article on VanityFair.com about the original writer of the DuckTales theme and how it came to be, it's a really good read, and I edited it, and I like it a lot, so go Google that, because it's just fun to hear about the guy who was like a out-of-work songwriter who tried to figure out what kind of theme song should go for a duck cartoon.
It's so good. Children's cartoon. Let's start a cover band.
Of just the Animaniacs and the DuckTales themes.
We could add some other ones in there. Tailspin?
What was the theme for Tailspin?
Spin it! Oh yeah, Tailspin. Oh yo, Tailspin.
I remember Chip and Dale, Rescue Rangers.
Okay, so do you remember Chip and Dale? Because that's the chorus. But
no, I don't remember. That's all I remember. What's the verse?
Oh God, I looked it up the other day because I was having the same problem, but it's like... Yeah, it's a melody I don't remember.
I mean, these cartoon theme songs, like, they're just, like, I remember the theme song for Denver the Last Dinosaur. I don't remember anything about that show at all, but I remember Denver the Last Dinosaur. He's my friend and a whole lot more. That's all. People love
this. Okay, there it is.
Please rate and review us on iTunes.
Please, right now.
All right, what's up with Chip and Dale?
It's like da 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 da.
Whoa, weird.
Da 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 da. There's like there's a key change.
Weird. That seems so like, you know, like a weird old film noir theme song.
Yeah. Well, I guess that's what they were. I don't remember as much about the show outside of I had a crush on the blonde one. Gadget Hack and Crunch.
So we'll have to save David's reflections on Telluride for next week because we can't find him. And there's lots more festival stuff to come. So we'll just have a lot to talk about next time we're all in one place. In the meantime, Dave, thank you for co-hosting this two-hander podcast with me. That was fun.
Thank you for calling you on Labor Day?
Yeah, I mean, we don't rest on our holidays. There was a royal baby announcement today. It was a big day.
It's Beyonce's birthday. I think I'm going to sleep.
Beyonce's birthday. Yeah, exactly. Beyonce's not sleeping. Anyway, Dave, where can people find you online?
You can find me on Twitter at DA7E. You can find me on Thrillist.com with a whole bunch of Game of Thrones coverage. You can find me
still?
At... it's still good coverage. I don't think anything new. My next new thing for Thrillist will not be Game of Thrones based. It will be
okay,
much
spookier
than that.
I hope you can just get a break, because it seems like a lot to still be talking about Game of Thrones.
Oh, yeah. No, we're mostly in off-season, but that means off-season tour, which means if you want to go to stormofspoilers.com, you'll notice we've given you a peek at our off-season tour with our Defenders review episode, a.k.a. we observe more of the worst Iron Fist ever on Netflix.
Great. I'm Katie Rich. I'm at VanityFair.com. And this week, I'll be at the Toronto Film Festival, which is very exciting for me. So if you're there, say hello. And otherwise, I'll be back next week to talk about all the movies I got to see before I return to my land of no new movie releases and also having to get a babysitter to see movies. So I'll be caught up. It'll be very exciting.
Do you have like a red carpet bingo that you got going on?
For like myself or for what I see?
Yeah. Either one.
Oh, I don't know. You should help me draw it up. Like, you know, having, like, someone give me a weird look or accidentally tripping someone, that kind of thing.
Like a publicist spells person's name wrong on whiteboard.
Oh, yeah. Or doesn't tell me who I'm talking to and just, like, shoves a person in front of your face on a red carpet and you're like, hello, I don't know who you are. Which
also, John Hamm will just be one space.
Yeah, no, John Hamm's co-hosting Red Carpets with me. He just does that. He doesn't have anything else.
Yeah. Katie, John Hamm fanfic is my favorite fanfic.
Oh, God. I don't think I want you to link that to me. Anyway, we will be back next week once I've survived all of this travel. And thanks for listening. We'll be back talking to you next week.